Welcome back to Cocktails and Classics. I'm Dylan. Joining me is Ben. It's another dad chat. Just two dads drinking and talking. Talk about movies your dad's probably seen, you know? And this week we're doing Rio Bravo, 1959 Western film directed by Howard Hawks. And to kick things off and get everybody in the right mood, we're going to go to this week's cocktail, the Mint Julep. More so known for its ties to the Kentucky Derby, I would say, the Mint Julep is a kind of like classic bourbon drink. And in the movie, John Wayne's character is given a special cocktail, or like special like bottle by Feathers, his love interest in the film. And so I assume it's bourbon because it is a dark liquor. That's why we went with the Mint Julep. We haven't done the Mint Julep yet in the podcast.
Kind of surprising. We made it this far and haven't done a Mint Julep.
I feel like I don't know. There's not really many horse racing movies besides, like, I guess Secretariat or something, but like
Seabiscuit.
I feel like I was kind of waiting to tie it to that.
Yeah, that's fair.
To make a Mint Julep, this is a very specific recipe. You need about 8 mint leaves, 1/4 ounces of simple syrup, 2 ounces of bourbon. Muddle the simple syrup and the mint together. Pour your bourbon in. You do crushed ice. You're basically kind of making like a snow cone or like an icy almost. And you're stirring it until it gets like frosty on the outside almost. And then you pack it more and you get like a little dome. So it's like, it's warm, it's hot, your ice is melting. Your julep's getting a little watered down a little bit maybe. Not so much for us right now because we're drinking it like right after we made it. And it's room temp in our houses, I'm sure. So it's kind of, it's bourbon with a hint of mint.
It tastes like I'm chewing spearmint and just drinking bourbon. That's the flavor. That's the best way I could describe this. Like, pour bourbon in a glass, chew some spearmint, take some sips. That's about where I'm at.
I don't want to say I randled it, but I will say I wimped out a little bit and went with 1/2 ounce of simple syrup because I didn't want to just drink like a shot of bourbon with,
So I used the
thought
same,
of sweetness and mint.
The same mint syrup that I had from last week. So this was actually super convenient, especially because I think I need to use it. It says best by August. So like, I got to get on that.
Oh,
so I'm like, all right, cool. Another summery mint cocktail. This is good. This gives me options for the rest of summer to kind of get my way through this. So it was like 3 parts bourbon to 1 part of the mint syrup. And then you just kind of stirred. I went ahead and stirred this for a while. I started with my cup just completely to the brim of ice, poured the whiskey or bourbon in, and then the mixer, and then just kept kind of stirring until the ice just slowly kept dropping down. Best way to do it.
I was like, I don't have crushed ice, so I don't know how like watered down it's actually gonna get to start. So I stirred until I couldn't hold because I just used, I don't have a julep cup, but I used the Moscow Mule ones just because it's also like metal. So I was like, I'm just going to do it until I can't bear holding the metal cup anymore. And that should be cold enough, right?
Yeah, I do think crushed ice would make it better.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even now as it's been sitting and kind of watering down, it does get a little bit better, a little bit smoother. So
yeah, I think this one is definitely like your bourbon is going to shine. So make sure you have like something that tastes good and you're not just using like something that's available, I guess. Like I would definitely get something that's going to taste pretty good in the drink.
Yeah. Don't do this with like Black Velvet. Be like, oh, I'm mixing it. It's perfectly fine. No, it's not. It's not. If you've got a bottle of a nicer bourbon, go for it.
I know you talked about, you were like, oh, I used the same mint syrup I did last week. And I thought about that when I picked this drink and I was like, damn, I mean, it kind of fits, like it's summery too. And, you know, as we get into summer, we can talk about this week's sponsor, Liquid IV. You want to really prioritize your health and your wellness, you know? Liquid IV is the category-winning hydration brand fueling your well-being, and their Hydration Multiplier is the one product you're missing in your daily routine. In just one stick, you get 5 essential vitamins and 2 times faster hydration than water alone. Use it first thing in the morning, before a workout, when you feel run down, after a long night out or on long flights. I've had this before. We had it at work a couple times. And like, you know, it's kind of easy to do when you're, you know, if you're like me, I'm really bad about not drinking water. Especially at work, I'm like coffee, coffee, coffee. You get to a certain point of the day and you're just like, when's the last time I had some water? So I like chug one of these like liquid IVs. And they taste pretty good. They come in these little like sachets, little packs, like those little drink mix packs that you would get back in the day. It's basically like one of those, and it tastes like those too. They have tons of flavors: strawberry lemonade, Concord grape, lemon lime, pina colada, tropical punch, watermelon, strawberry. So you know, you can really pick your choose. And if you want to try Liquid IV, you can get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use Cocktails and Classics. That's our code, Cocktails and Classics, at checkout. And that's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code Cocktails and Classics at liquidiv.com. So check out Liquid IV and get ready for summer, baby. It's hot out. Stay hydrated.
Absolutely. Especially here in Michigan. And I'm sure where you're at in down in Atlanta, it's not just the heat, it's that humidity. You got to get through that humidity. And that Liquid IV is going to help you replenish getting through those days. Sometimes it's a slog.
It's 95 next week, Ben. I need the Liquid IV now. Stat.
I'm drinking straight bourbon pretty much. I'm going to need that Liquid IV tomorrow.
When I wake up in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
So this week we did Rio Bravo, 1959 Western film starring John Wayne, Dean Martin, Ricky Nelson, Angie Dickinson, Walter Brennan, Ward Bond, Pedro Gonzalez, Estelito Rodriguez.
It's not a big cast.
It was directed by Howard Hawks, written by Jules Furtherman, Lee Brackett, and B.H. McCampbell. It's the story of a small-town sheriff in the American West enlists the help of a disabled man, a drunk, and a young gunfighter in his efforts to hold in jail the brother of a local bad guy. It currently sits at an 8 out of 10 on IMDb. It was nominated for Outstanding Directorial Achievement at the Directors Guild Awards in 1960, and it was also nominated for Most Promising Newcomer Female and Most Promising Newcomer Male at the Golden Globes. I hadn't seen this. Had you? Is this your first time watching it? Or...
No, I'd seen this. Yeah.
I didn't know if you like were recommending it because you hadn't seen it. So
no. Weirdly enough, I was talking up at the lake with my dad, and he's like, "Yeah, you guys, you know, talking about certain movies about that," and he's like, "Yeah, you guys haven't done many like westerns. You did The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but that was, and I guess Tombstone kind of recently, but that's not really like a true western." And I was like, "Yeah." And then I think it was because I had just been looking on Max not that long ago, and it popped up. So I feel like there's a lot of John Wayne movies that either they just left or they were advertising that were like, I know The Searchers was on there. I think maybe Real Lobo, a couple of other ones that they did. But growing up, that was one. My grandpa was a huge John Wayne fan. War movies and westerns were all he watched. And whether they had John Wayne or not, but it was everywhere. And I remember at one point my dad was one of those that was like, every man should see Rio Bravo. Okay. So I think I first watched it. God. Here's what I can tell you, it came up. We were flipping through channels when I was in high school, and we ended up watching the entire movie War Wagon. Don't know why. At the end of it, and he's like, "It's good. It's no Rio Bravo." I'm like, "I wouldn't know. Haven't seen it." "What? You haven't seen it?" So then, like, I feel like a week later, we sat down and watched it, and I've probably seen it a couple times since then. We should have had Jarrett come on. Jarrett loves this movie.
Really? Are you being sarcastic?
No. If we hop on the Xbox machine later, tell Jarrett we watched Rio Bravo for the podcast. He's gonna flip.
Okay, I'll
I think his family watches it like every Thanksgiving or something. Like they have like a weird tradition about it.
Okay, that's interesting. I as someone who had not seen this film, I didn't quite know what to expect, but it definitely was not what I expected at all. I expected like a high action like western film where it was like you know, gunslinging. Like, it's not that. It starts out real quick where it's like, boom, somebody's shot. Like, it's tense. And then after that, it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of like movies that I could compare it to. But it's like the old, like, we've got to keep this guy locked up. And we're just like patrolling. There's a couple high stakes moments with like when they knock out dude, fake him and bring in the guys with guns. And then there's a tense-ish moment when Nate Burdette comes in and he's like kind of trying to like power play him almost. But other than that, well, and the big gun fight at the end, but it's pretty just like slice of life almost. Like, it's kind of just like, hey, dude's back. He's sober now, but he's really going through it. So he's quit cold turkey. We got to get him through that. And the Colorado doesn't really want to hang out with us, but, you know, we were slowly going to break him down. And then now there's Feathers and Stumpy or whatever. Like, it's like,
old Stumpy, the man I left behind.
It's not what I was expecting at all.
Yeah, there's, when you realize, I mean, the gunfight at the end is what? Probably 20 minutes?
If even.
At least.
If even?
If even? Okay. Because, I mean, the movie's only 2 hours.
20 minutes.
I guess it is 2:20.
It's kind of long. I could definitely see some stuff you could cut to make it move a little faster. But that's not, I didn't hate it. Don't get me wrong. Like, not much happens, but it wasn't like boring.
Yeah.
I think it keeps you entertained enough because you really have to like buy into like John Wayne and like what's going on in the situation. Because I think a lot of it is, it's more of just kind of like a character driven movie rather than like action. Because at the end, even the gunfight, like there's the occasional shooting at them, but there's never any like, there's no real threat to them. Because at a certain point, like, you know, he goes and gets Stumpy away from the dynamite, but then it's just like, all right, Stumpy grabs a box. Now let's start throwing it and shooting it, you know? It's like, what the fuck? Like, we went from like, maybe we're going to get shot to like, now we're just blowing their ass up. All right, cool. I think I swear I've seen Stagecoach before, like in a film class. Besides that, I think this is the only other John Wayne movie I've ever seen. Like, I think most of what I know of John Wayne is like memes that people like, his weird like cadence that he talks in.
Yeah, John Wayne has a certain way of talking.
Exactly, just like that. Yeah. Like, but he also has that, like, I don't know. I feel like he's, even though I've only seen two John Wayne movies, he is so iconic and has like completely permeated like pop culture that like you see his face and it's like, oh, that's John Wayne, you know? If you didn't know who Michael Jordan was, I feel like you'd be like, oh, that's Michael Jordan. I don't know. There's like certain people who are so beyond what their role was that they are just instantly recognizable, even, you know, just from like a picture of them.
No, I mean, he is such a huge part of the, I mean, I think the 50s and 60s, really the entire Western genre. And also, I mean, like, not as much, but also like war movie genre, that he just was such a popular person that, yeah, when you think Western, you thought John Wayne. That's just who you thought of.
He's just an important like person in film too. Like, Western's kind of dead today, I would say, almost. I think some of the elements have bled into like sci-fi with, you know, you got like your Star Wars and all that, or like even just like anime, and there's like, there's elements of Westerns in a lot of places, but we don't really get Western movies anymore. Maybe that's just because like the concept of the Wild West is not, it's not close to us anymore.
Yeah, I think people just don't, they're not as interested in that. Although, I don't know, because you see a game like Red Dead Redemption that does so well, that people just love. And you would think that there's still, I guess, some sort of nostalgia, or, I don't want to say nostalgia, because no one lived through it. No one alive today lived through it. But there is some sort of, I guess, maybe romanticization.
Yeah.
God, that's probably not a word. Someone somewhere is like, this fucking idiot doesn't know how to talk. But there's probably plenty of people who do romanticize the period. It's always shocked me that that was such a... I think what was Westerns is now, like, superhero movies.
Yeah.
I think superhero movies are the Westerns of today, where it's like they're constantly coming out. They're these weird mythos. I think the biggest difference is that the heroes are played by more, I guess, of a little bit of a different character. Because sometimes, you know, a John Wayne Western is a John Wayne Western. You pretty much know what's going to happen. In fact, if you kind of liked Rio Bravo, but not a ton, there's like three other movies that are almost the exact same movie that you could just see.
Yeah.
I think Rio Lobo and El Dorado are both practically the exact same movie. They each have like a grungy looking old man who's like the deputy. They're almost all identical.
I mean, look at this dude's like IMDb page. And between 1926 and like 1976, so 50 years, this guy made 184 movies. So this guy was making 3 movies a year, basically.
Oh, yeah.
This dude was pumping out Westerns.
You know what's absolutely insane? John Wayne was a football player.
Mm-hmm.
He had a scholarship to play at USC. Do you know how he ended up losing his spot on the team?
How?
The man wrecked his shoulder surfing.
John Not what Wayne, you would expect.
John Wayne. The quintessential... I mean, let's be honest, and I don't mean to ruffle feathers, but if there's like a conservative Mount Rushmore, Ronald Reagan and John Wayne are like the top two names on that list. This man was... a fucking surfer bro that hurt his shoulder and went into a movie career.
That is kind of crazy to think about, because like, yeah, I would not have ever been like, oh yeah, surfer. That John Wayne.
Right? Isn't that absolutely nuts?
Damn. So they have some of his salaries, I guess, on here. He made for the War Wagon, he made $1 million plus a percentage of the gross. The Horse Soldiers, $750,000 plus 20% of the gross?
What?
That's pretty crazy. I mean, I wonder how much this movie actually made.
I don't know how many other movies Ricky Nelson really did. And this is just a fun fact. Ricky Nelson was not the first choice for this movie.
I think I saw that. It was... Who was it, though? I forget...
Who else could it have been at that time? There's only one name. You don't even need a last name. One name.
Oh, God. Who was it? I forgot.
What? How do you not remember his name? Dear Christ, a movie just came out about him like a year ago.
Oh, Elvis, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was supposed to be Elvis, but I guess Colonel Tom Parker wanted just way too much money. And so they're like, yeah, nope, we'll offer it to this Ricky Nelson kid.
Which, like, obviously wasn't, like, that part wasn't super important.
No, but I think at the time, Elvis wasn't really doing a lot of movies. This was before Elvis went to the war and then came back. It wasn't until Elvis really came back that he started making a lot of, you know, Blue Hawaii and Jailhouse Rock and... all the other movies he did really happened after he came back. So this kind of would have kickstarted him a little bit more so had he gotten on there faster. But they wanted Elvis, and Elvis wanted too much money. So they said, well, we'll go to Ricky Nelson, who I thought, I mean, it's a Western. So I wasn't expecting, you know, I wasn't expecting any Shakespearean effort to be put forth, but I don't think there's anyone in this movie that I look at and I'm like, oh, dear God, what a terrible job they did.
No, it's kind of funny because, like, actually looking at, like, Ricky Nelson in this movie definitely gives Elvis vibes. Like, they have similar looking faces, too. Yeah, I feel like, just the chemistry between the characters really carries a lot of it. Because I feel like if you didn't if you didn't believe the relationship between like Dude and Sheriff Chance or like Stumpy and Chance, you wouldn't really carry it. It wouldn't be the same movie. Those guys, their dynamic, even like when they're in the scene together and like, you know, Stumpy's bitching, cracking jokes, and they're all just like kind of rubbing each other wrong way because they've basically been trapped in the same room for 6 days or whatever. Like, just all of that is like, it provides humor at moments. It provides like, oh man, like is Dude gonna like go back to drinking? Like, I'm like, what's going on? Or when they're on patrol and Dude and Chance are like watching each other's backs, doing the little whistles to like, hey, check out this door for me. I think a lot of that is due to like their chemistry together, and that pays off a lot for this film.
Yeah, I think Dean Martin is surprisingly really good in this movie.
Yeah.
For someone who's primarily, I mean, you know, he did a lot of, obviously, music as a member of the Rat Pack, but being that May, he did also more movie work. But when I think of his movies and stuff, I think of the stuff he did with like Jerry Lewis and more comedy and stuff like that, where, I mean, he does do for what this movie is. He's pretty good.
And I do feel like, you know, they just kind of threw in a couple musical numbers in there because we had Ricky Nelson and Dean Martin. We were like, hey.
But they're so good.
Like when they're in the jail cell singing.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, All right, let's shoehorn this bad boy in here.
Well, I like how they do the nice slow song and they're like, well, come on, we have Ricky Nelson. We have to do something a little bit more up-tempo.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this movie, too, is that John Wayne, again, being the very staunch person he was, he really wanted to make this movie in response to a Gary Cooper movie called High Noon. So basically, it's very similar. It's about a sheriff who's, you know, they're coming to get him, and that the sheriff went around begging for help from the town, and the town people refused to help him. And then at the end of the showdown, the marshal like throws his badge down and walks away. John Wayne saw this and thought that that's not what an American would do. And an American wouldn't go around asking for help. He'd just do it himself. And so that's where Rio Bravo was born of. Apparently, he also had the writer of High Noon. He helped, quote, run him out of the country. Because he was a member of the Communist Party in the United States.
Gotta love 50s Hollywood.
Man, what a time. What a time to just, like, read headlines, be like, what the hell is going on?
And it's sad because he just literally could not do anything. Like, oh, what's your argument against being a communist? I'm not a communist? Well, John Wayne said you were. Sorry, man.
I mean, to be fair, he was literally a member of the Communist Party, but still, just to be like, yeah, you know what? I had him ran out of the country. You know what? I don't regret it. He was a communist.
All right, but, like, there were people who were not communists that got kicked out.
Yes. While you're thinking, I'm going to bring up the fact that on top of Dean Martin, who I thought did an excellent job in this movie, Walter Brennan is just the best. And I love him and everything about him in this movie. His comedic relief character is so good. And just, I love the fact that he's just the character that, like, we see just kind of living his normal, like, his day-to-day life and griping about, like, pedantic shit and his boss. I just love the fact that that's what his character is. It's great. He is wonderful. And then there was a quote he had where he said people expected him when they met him to walk and like limp like Stumpy. And he's like, I never got offended. He's like, I just took it as a compliment to how good my acting was in the movie. That people thought I actually had a limp. People thought I actually couldn't walk right.
Is that his voice or is he just putting on a, like, that's his like accent?
It's like, so it's the high pitched is different.
Okay.
So at some point during a movie filming, I guess he fell or he got hit or something, and he lost like most of his teeth.
Oh.
So he wore like fake teeth, but that kind of like whistling in that is when he took out his teeth, and like that's what made that happen. So that was actually him. He had, on top of a long, I mean, storied acting, I think he started doing movies in like the 1920s. And then worked all the way through. God, I don't know when, what his last, I'd be curious to know what his last thing was. I was going to say probably like the 70s, but yeah, he actually was in something as late as 75. So he had a really long career, but he also did, he released a couple like country folk albums.
Oh my God.
Or maybe just one. But he does a song, Old Rivers is the name of the song. Beautiful song. Gets me every time. It's a little teary.
It's kind of crazy to like, I mean, there's people who do it now, but I feel like it's not as like, it's not as big, but like, it's kind of crazy to me that a lot of people would do, they'd be like, oh, I'm an actor, and then like go and make like a country album, or, you know, some of the people who are like, oh, like I'm a musician and let me go make like 10 films, you know?
I think the big thing was like, oh, you're the star of this Western movie or Western TV show? Well, now we need you to record a Western album.
You think it's more like the studios and stuff being like, we can make more money from this?
I would think so.
I was just looking through the trivia. It says, on May 8th, 1958, just 1 week into shooting, Ricky Nelson celebrated his 18th birthday. As a gift, John Wayne and Dean Martin gave him a 300-pound sack of manure, which they threw him into as a rite of passage. What the fuck?
Jesus.
Oh my God.
So this was an interesting, I saw this on the trivia earlier. I think it had to do with the unknown cowboy who gets shot in the beginning of the movie is Kurt Russell's dad.
Interesting. Is he on the IMDb page?
I don't think so. I think he was like uncredited. Early in the film, the cowboy killed by Joe Burdett is played by Bing Russell, Kurt Russell's father, in an uncredited role.
I also saw, like, Dean Martin wanted to be in the movie. His agent approached Howard Hawks to consider his client for the role for the drunken deputy dude. Hawks agreed to meet with Martin at 9:30 the next morning. When Hawks learned that Martin had done a show in Las Vegas until midnight, hired a plane to fly him to the meeting. Hawks was so impressed that he simply sent Martin to get a costume and told him he had the part. I mean, that is dedication.
I don't know. I guess staying up till midnight and making it to a thing by 9:30 is not. But I guess you got to think the show wraps at midnight. So you got to get out of there, get to an airport, deal with all the riffraff. I don't know. That still doesn't sound that crazy to me. Maybe it's just because I'll be up until 11 or midnight and wake up at 5 in the morning because I have a child.
He did a show, though. He did a show in New York, you know, that's the thing. Or, like, Vegas.
Las Vegas.
Like, he did it. Yeah, he did
a
show there.
So he was, what, like a 40-minute flight?
Okay, maybe not in the 50s.
Okay, sorry.
Should have played a little slower.
It's probably an hour-long flight?
I think the only other Howard Hawks film I've seen is The Thing from Another World, like the original Thing. I have The Big Sleep. I've just never watched it.
I didn't realize he did Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Yeah, I've never seen the OG Scarface. Yeah, I think that's the only one. But, like, I feel like Howard Hawks is kind of, like, he's another one of those people who are, it's just so famous in Hollywood. But I've just never really, like, seen anything.
It doesn't help that most of his movies were done before 1960. And of the ones made after 1960, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them, 2 of them were basically Rio Bravo just made again. Like, literally, there's a thing I had read where John Wayne on the set of, I think, Rio Lobo, I think it was Rio Lobo, asked Howard Hawks, and he was reading the script and said, haven't we made this before? Haven't we already shot this? That's how identical the movies are. I will say I think my favorite John Wayne quote of all time, and I want to look it up, but it had to do when he won. He did win an Oscar. I think it was for True Grit. He won an Oscar for playing... I think it was, what's the character's name? Rooster Cogburn?
Mm-hmm.
It was when he was accepting his Oscar. He said, if I'd known all this, if I'd known this, this was all it would take, I would have put on an eye patch 40 years ago.
Oh my God. I did see here, Quentin Tarantino said that Rio Bravo may be his favorite film of all time.
Well, there you go. We should have had him on the podcast.
And now I'm in a Howard Hawks trivia rabbit hole here. He said in interviews that he was supposed to direct Casablanca and Michael Curtis was supposed to direct Sergeant New York. However, the two directors had lunch together and Curtis complained that he knew nothing about the Hill People while Hawks was struggling to make this musical comedy, so they switched films. Hawks said that he always considered Casablanca a musical comedy because of the number of singing scenes in the cafe, namely the La Marseillaise scene. Later, Hawks said that Curtis shot the film beautifully and the whole picture came out different because of the two people in it. They made you believe something. When I saw Casablanca, I liked it, but I never had any faith in my doing anything like that.
I mean, that's a pretty good way to look at things, because you could have looked at it and been like, damn, I really screwed up not making this movie.
Yeah, it's almost like it's like one of those like Spielberg and Lucas type things where they're like, "Oh, I believe in your film more than my film," and like I always love those stories of like
yeah,
you could what that would not happen just, today.
No, absolutely not. Not a chance. No one would walk away from a movie and be like, "No, I don't really know this. I think you should do it."
Well, I think it's also just, like, so different now because, like, you know, it used to be, like, the studio system where it would be like, all right, well, we're making 5 films this year. We need a director to do 2 of those. Like, Howard, you're in or whatever. You know, like, I feel like it's now.
Or you were just literally always on the studio payroll. Like, yeah. Oh, we're making this movie. Yeah, Howard, you go ahead and take it. And yeah. This movie... you're gonna do.
Yeah, I think now it's so much more like, because there's a lot of like writer directors or like, you know, there's like, it's not necessarily harder to make movies, but they're less frequent in a sense. I feel like they're not churning them out as much, but
I feel like in the olden days, I feel like in the what people consider like the golden age of Hollywood studios, they got a script, they if they liked it then they made it and then they picked a director to make it, versus now I feel like you need to have like a writer, a director, and like several other things kind of set before you're even like greenlit to do anything.
Yeah,
unless it's like a franchise or, you know, Like the DC movies where it's like, yeah, it's gonna be Batman, the Brave and the Bold. Like, all right, cool. We don't have a writer and we don't have a director attached yet. It's like, oh, that's kind of weird that you're already announcing the title of a movie that hasn't been written and hasn't been. You have no idea who's gonna make it, but all right. I feel like my family quotes this movie so much more than probably anyone else.
Really?
I've heard my dad, when you say anything that you say sorry, and he just says, sorry, don't get it done, dude. That's the second time you hit me. Don't ever do it again.
I was going to say, like, what is your dad quoting
that
from
one,
this movie?
Almost always, sorry, don't get it done, dude.
Does he do it in the John Wayne accent, too?
Oh, come on.
All right, yeah, I was going to say, I only see it, your dad doing it in that.
Do you really
accent,
think
though.
We wouldn't commit? It's not one that we really quote back and forth, but I do love the old Stumpy, the man I left behind. When he shows up, I feel like we say the man I left behind pretty frequently.
One scene that I did really like how it was done was the scene where Dude and Chance, they see the guy run into the bar. So they go into the bar, and then everyone's like, no one ran in here. You're drinking again, dude, or whatever. And they throw the coin in the spittoon and all that. And Dude is like defeated because he's like, no, it's like, ugh, like, I know he's in here somewhere. And then he goes to the bar and he's like borderline about to break for a drink. And he sees the beer on the bar that's like covered in blood. And he notices like, oh, somebody's bleeding above us. And you're like, oh shit. Like that scene, the way they did that scene, I think was so good. Cause I think it's very cool the way they like kind of reveal it with the blood dripping down from the rafters. Cause you see the guy beforehand and he's got his gun pointed down, and then Dude just kind of like, whips and caps him real quick.
God. Whips and caps him real quick. Oh my God. Yeah, that is one of the better. Even seeing that movie, I mean, God, I probably saw it in the late 2000s. I thought that was like an inventive, like, oh, that's, I don't think I'd seen that, but I don't think I've seen people copy that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that concept of like something dripping down.
Yeah, I think like, I think of like Mission Impossible where like the sweat's about to drip.
Yeah. Or, like, I'm sure Alien or something has been like that, where it's, like, you see stuff, like, dripping down and, like, yeah, the acid burning and stuff. But it's, like, in that sense, in that same, like, kind of scene, I feel like it hasn't really been done that I can think of. But that, like, concept of revealing something happening from it dripping down from above, I feel that has been copied, but not in that exact same kind of sense of, like, oh, there's a killer up above you and you gotta get him.
I will say, not pertaining to this movie, but I think it was having to do with the last, which I can't now remember which. Was El Dorado the last one? I'm trying to remember which was the last one in the... They call it a trilogy. It wasn't really a trilogy. Rio Lobo. When John Wayne showed up on set, he's like, okay, so I play the old... Like, I play the old drunken grumpy guy this time, right? Like, no. you're still you. I would have loved to have seen that. Just let John Wayne be, like, the comedic relief character just to see how it plays out. What a world we could have lived in.
I want to know if he had, like... Because, you know, a lot of those, like, movie stars used to have, and some still do, I think, like, The Rock, you know, where it's like, I can't die. I'm basically invincible. Can't ever lose to the bad guy. Like, I feel like Sly, Arnold probably had that. I think The Rock has it. I'm sure Vin Diesel. But, like, did John Wayne have that? I feel like he did, because he was always the good guy.
I can't think of a movie where he, like... Well, okay. Are we just going to start spoiling some movies? Are we throwing spoilers out?
And we can. We can just be all like, right, hey,
everyone.
These are old movies. John Wayne hasn't been in movies since the 60s, so sorry. It's a fair game.
So there's a movie that came out many years ago. Black and white. Really good movie. I will say this. It stars John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, and who else is in it? Lee Marvin. It's called The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. And it's the whole story. There's a whole song about it. You're probably more familiar with the song than the movie. Who shot Liberty Valance? He shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all. So anyways, he's in the movie. You're supposed to... Spoilers. If you guys haven't seen the movie, it's kind of long. I'm not going to lie. It's black and white. It's a long watch, but it's good. I have watched it. You're led to believe that James Stewart kills Liberty Valance. In reality, it's John Wayne's character that kills Liberty Valance. And in the end, he doesn't get the girl. And you, when you first are introduced to the movie, it's a senator going home for a funeral. And then at the end of the movie, you find out that it is John Wayne's character's funeral. So he's not even alive at the end of the movie. He's not alive at the beginning of the movie. He does kind of play the hero character, but he doesn't get the girl and he doesn't get the credit. I think that's the most, I guess I would say, where he's kind of not the main hero of the story.
John Wayne died in 9 films.
I mean, considering he was in
184.
184. And I wonder how many of those are early on, right?
So there's, I'm not going to name names. I don't want to just batch spoil a bunch of movies for people. 70s, 70s, 60s, 49, 44, 42, 43, 33. And then there are a few films where his death is not seen. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, movie in 55, movie in 31, and movie in 28. And the ones where it's not shown, it's like, oh, this character is either about to die, like he's to be hanged and tried, or he's like the thing ship he was on sank, and it's either they may have died or maybe they're survived, you know. So, but then there is ones where he like died on died on screen. But only nine out of 184 is pretty wild.
It's a pretty good run.
I think the relationship between Feathers and John Wayne's character Chance is a little weird because she seems super young and he's like super old. But
yeah, I think that's one of those things where like Roger Moore talked about it when he was getting towards the end of his run as James Bond. He's like, you know, it was one thing when I started and the girls were like not super different. It's like, but the last one I did, like the last couple, it seems like the girls are young enough to be my granddaughter, let alone my daughter. I can't do it anymore. It's like, okay, that's fair. He was 51, I think, when they shot this. He doesn't come across as in his 50s.
He just looks a little rough, like older, rougher, you know.
Well, it's the Wild West, Dylan.
I know, yeah. But like, yeah, I don't know. Like she's kind of like, hey, like I'm gonna leave my door open if you want to come hang out, you know, if you change your mind. And he's like, that's all right. I'm gonna go sleep in the jail. Like she like makes all these passes at him.
I'm gonna go sleep with a toothless old guy in the jail.
He's cooking us dinner for everybody, even the prisoner. I had not seen this film, so I'll go first. But I'll give you a nostalgia rating and an updated rating after watching Rio Bravo again. Having never seen this film, it's definitely not what I expected. I don't know why. I mean, maybe it is that like most of the Westerns I've seen have probably been like spaghetti Westerns or more like shoot 'em up, like higher stakes, I guess, maybe. I don't know. But I was kind of expecting something that was like a lot more action-packed. And that's not what I got. But I didn't hate that. I feel like I've seen movies like this movie in the sense of like the plot, like, oh, we have this prisoner and we've got to keep him in tow until like a certain time. Like Assault on Precinct 13 by John Carpenter. You ever seen that movie?
I haven't seen it, but I do know that it's, I think Carpenter's even said that this was like a big inspiration.
Yeah, I would probably say that this is probably the biggest inspiration because it's pretty much the same movie. Remade as Assault on Precinct 13, apparently. I think this movie is good. I think John Wayne, Dean Martin, Ricky Nelson, your other friend that you really loved, Walter Brennan, the dynamic of those four, which like Colorado's not in there all the time. But those four, their dynamics together really carries the movie, the chemistry. And so much of the movie is just them like trying to maintain some source of like justice, I guess, in this town. Because the bad guy has money. The bad guy has a powerful brother. The bad guy gets away with everything he does. And so like he's got all his goons like posted up in the city and stuff, and they, you know, they started trying to be tricky and knock out dude and get like guns in the town and all this stuff, and it's like, it's, you know, so much of it is like them just trying to survive, but not really like the stakes being that high for most of that. There is like the small romance between Feathers and Chance, which is like, you know, whatever, take it or leave it. Like, and then I think the big gunfight at the end, while there's like some threat to them, there's not really that much threat. And by the end of it, it's more like fun, shoot 'em up, like let's blow up the dynamite and like really take 'em out kind of thing. And that's fine, you know, it's not quite my cup of tea. I think it's shot well, like, you know, it's a Western movie. It's fucking cooking the sun on them, and, you know, there's probably not a single light in any of the daylight scenes because it's broad daylight. And I think it's good. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. There are things that I wish, like, I wish there was a little bit more action or a little bit more, like, moments where I was kind of like, oh shit, like they're in trouble. I think it has its place in history, and I think I would recommend you watch it.
Yeah. So I think going into it, I had it probably around the same thing, probably a 7 out of 10. Again, it's a movie I remember fondly just because I remember this is one that like nostalgia is not just like kid nostalgia, but like it's watching it with my dad and enjoying. Not only is it something I got to see, you know, the first time me watching it, but knowing like his excitement of showing it to someone for the first time, I still really enjoy this movie. To me, it's a fun Western movie. It's what a Western movie, when I think of it, I think Western. When I think of a Western, I think this movie. I know John Wayne is pretty much always like John Wayne. There's few exceptions where John Wayne really acts a different character than what you just expect a John Wayne character to be. Unless you're watching a ton of those movies, you don't really know. You just kind of enjoy the character for what he is. Dean Martin is phenomenal. He does such a good job of playing kind of unsure of himself. And like I said, when I think of Dean Martin, I don't think serious actor. I think of a lot more of like the comedy, or he's, you know, he's the handsome man to the Jerry Lewis goofball character in a lot of the 50s comedies. But I think he does so well in this movie. Walter Brennan, I think, steals this movie. Stumpy is the best part, hands down. Again, I love just the dynamic of this serious John Wayne character, and then his sidekick is this grumpy old man who's just like not afraid to call him out on his bullshit. Like you said, I think it stood out so much more to me this time around than previous watches, how good the chemistry between the three and sometimes four, but the relationship between the three, John Wayne, Dean Martin, and Walter Brennan, their characters, you know, like when John Wayne gives Stumpy a peck on the head before he goes to leave the jail. Just some of those things where it's just like, you know, it makes you kind of appreciate the fact that these guys do feel more friends or family. And it makes sense then as to why John Wayne isn't, you know, he's willing to ride with these two by his side, you know, obviously before Colorado's boss, I'm blanking on his name.
Pat Wheeler.
Yeah. Before Wheeler dies, John Wayne's just like, no, I'm good with dude and I'm good with Stumpy, and that's what it's going to be. And that's it. Yeah, I enjoy this movie. I think it's fun. I just enjoy it. This is one that's hard to just ever cut nostalgia from. I might actually have bumped this one up. I think I went from a 7 to an 8. I think this is the quintessential Western movie. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
If you enjoyed this, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Check us out on Instagram at Cocktails and Classics Pod, and check out our website, www.cocktailsandclassicspod.com. Hit up the show notes. You can make yourself a mint julep. And don't forget to go to liquidiv.com. Use Cocktails and Classics as your promo code, and you get 20% off of anything that you order. And that's Cocktails and Classics. at liquidiv.com. Check us out next time, and as always, watch responsibly.